Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Maitreya uvacha. Prachetasa. Pitu vakyam. Prachetasa pitu vakyam. Prachetasa pitu vakyam. Shirasadaya sadava. Shirasadaya sadava. Shirasadaya sadava. Prachetasa pitu vakyam. Shirasadaya sadava. Dishang praticing prayuyus. Dishang praticing prayuyus. Dishang praticing prayuyus. Tapasi adrita chetasam. Tapasyadrita chetasa. Tapasyadrita chetasa. Dishang praticing prayuyus. Tapasyadrita chetasa. Maitreya uvacha. Prachetasa pitur vakyam. Shirasadaya sadava. Dishang praticing prayuyus. Tapasyadrita chetasa. Maitreya uvacha. Prachetasa pitu vakyam. Shirasadaya sarava. Dishang praticing prayuyus. Tapasyadrita chetasa. Maitreya uvacha. The great sage Maitreya continued to speak. Prachetasa. All the sons of King Prachinabahi. Pitu. Of the father. Vakyam. Words. Shirasa. On the head. Adaya. Accepting. Sadava. All pious. This is a very significant statement. What's being made here is this Vakyam Shirasa Adaya. And then it says Sadava. Because of their saintly nature, because they're actually pious persons, then when their father, who, you know, as we understand, the father is considered one of the gurus, when their father gave them an instruction, they took it on their head as their life and soul. It wasn't like they were just, oh, okay, you know, dad says, and he's a bit of a pain, but we'll just do it to keep him happy kind of thing. Which is, you know, like, I guess, you know, the closer you get to piety these days is that folks will just go along with what their parents say just to keep them quiet. But really, they don't actually, you know, imbibe it. Or at least when I grew up, you just didn't take any notice of your parents at all. Because what do they know, you know? I mean, what's their experience in life? You know, they're so out of date, you know, so old-fashioned. So it's quite common in this day and age that people are not inclined to listen to their superiors at all. And this is the very opposite of what is necessary for making advancement in spiritual life. And this is the point that's being demonstrated here in this verse, is how, because they were pious, that they accepted the instructions of their father as their life and soul. They were submissive. And of course, it's not just like the father was just some fool giving some instruction. I mean, you just look at, you know, this day and age, you know, and it's like, you know, there's all these authorities. In every topic you want to name, there's authorities. You know, and they know about this, they know about that, and they're experts in everything. But they're fools. They have no idea what the purpose of life is. They have no idea of who they are. They're thinking their material body. They're thinking they're the controller. They're thinking they're the enjoyer. But they don't actually understand their eternal position as a servant of God. And this is the point here, is that the father, Prachanabahi, has given them an instruction to go and practice austerity, is to actually come to the point of God realization. That's the duty of the superior, is to help the dependent, or to guide the dependent, not just help, but actually to guide the dependent, so that ultimately they come to the point of unalloyed love of Godhead. That's the whole point of it. And the duty of the subordinate is to follow without deviation, without any thought of, well, maybe they're wrong. There's an interesting, I can't remember where it is, Prabhupada makes the comment, especially he's talking about brahmacharya, and he says that when the guru gives an instruction to the brahmachari, what's the response of the brahmachari? Huh? No. Yes, sir. Just yes, sir. No question of trying to understand, interpret, or maybe he meant this, or maybe he meant that, or maybe he's wrong. No, just yes, sir. This is actually a pious mentality. But we see in Kali Yuga that everyone is driven by false ego. And I was reading, I gave class in Singapore the day before yesterday, and a really interesting purport we're reading there, I think it's 3531 from memory. And there Prabhupada's talking, because the whole chapter's talking about how all the different elements generate from Mahatattva, ultimately by the glance of the Lord. And then it talks about false ego and how false ego in goodness creates mind, in passion creates the senses, and in ignorance, I think, creates sound from memory. And then Prabhupada, when he goes into this, in verse 31, he goes into this very interesting explanation of the nature of false ego. And that he says, ultimately, false ego is the root of godlessness. Because when we're driven by false ego, what do we think? We think that I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. So if we're thinking like this, then we've actually forgotten Krishna's position. We've forgotten that Krishna is the supreme controller. Actually, Krishna's the only controller. Krishna's the only enjoyer. Krishna's the only friend. Krishna points this out at the end of the fifth chapter of the Gita. And Srila Prabhupada, he calls his verse the Bhaktaranga Yagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suriram Sarvabhutanam Gyatvamam Shantim Ruchati. Prabhupada says this is actually the peace formula, the universal peace formula. If people can understand this, these simple things, if they can understand this, then they become peaceful. Gyatvamam, he said, knowing me like this, Shantim Ruchati, they attain peace. And it's kind of interesting that everyone in this world wants peace. You ask anyone, you know, what they want, and ultimately they get the point, you know, I just want to have a peaceful life. I just want to exist peacefully. I don't want to, you know, have any disturbance. I don't want anyone to kill me. I don't want anyone to, you know, don't want to die of a disease or whatever. I just want to have a peaceful life. But they have no idea how to achieve a peaceful life. They're thinking that, you know, if I pay my taxes, I work hard, I do this, I do that, then I'll have a peaceful life. But what's the capacity of the government to provide a peaceful life? I mean, just to give you a very simple example, it's actually a horrible example, but a very simple example. Look at the last week in the United States of America. There's been 3 mass shootings. You know, and all the government can do is put a few tweets up on Twitter. Oh, this is a very horrible thing. This shouldn't happen. There should be, you know, no fear, no violence. Yet, the government themselves are propagating fear, violence, hatred, everything like that. So they're creating the situation because they have no idea what the purpose of life is. They're thinking the purpose of life is eat, drink, be merry. That's what they think, you know, just expand your material opulence unlimitedly, and this is how you become happy. But we see, you know, there are so many wealthy people in this world. Even in a city like Melbourne, there are so many wealthy people who have so much material opulence, but can they say they are truly happy? They're not. They're suffering. They're distressed. Why? Because they're actually misunderstanding what the goal of life is. They're thinking the goal of life is to have increased material and economic development. But they achieve that. In multi-billionaires, they achieve that. And this is a really interesting section here. We've just seen past few purports how Prabhupada discusses the followers of Lord Shiva. He talks about the greatness of Lord Shiva and the followers of Lord Shiva, how they have sometimes incredible material opulence. But the thing is, that you look at any material opulence you may have, whether it's wealth, whether it's strength, whether it's fame, beauty, knowledge, any of these things, how long do they last for? How long are you strong for? You could be a very, very strong person. How long does that last for? A few years. And it can go so quickly. To give you an example, right, as you all know, I've just been in hospital in England for a few weeks. And just lying in bed the whole time, 2 weeks, you know, practically, last week I couldn't even get out of bed on my own. I had to have someone pull me out of bed because the pain was so incredible. I didn't want to sort of burst the stitches or anything like that. And like just lying there in bed, all my muscles have just gone to flab. I've got no strength at all. Even like when I was in London, because the London temple is just 5 stories up and down. It's a very small temple. And climbing up 2-3 flights of stairs, I had to stop and sit down for a while because I was exhausted. You know, so you can see from experiences like this how fast these material opulences can dissipate. How fast, you know, just like in Australia here, there was one famous man, Alan Bond. Right, very, very wealthy person. He died a pauper. He died in debt. It just goes like that. Material opulence is so transient, so flickering. Yet, we see that most people in this material world place so much faith in these, as Prahlad Maharaj calls them, these fallible soldiers. And he calls them fallible soldiers for a very good reason, is because they all fall. Fallible means they're prone to falling. So everything in this material world will crumble into dust. You look at everything, you know, all these great civilizations that have existed in the past, the Greek civilization, the, what are those fighting guys, the really strong ones in the north of Greece? No, the Spartans, yeah, the Spartans. Very, very powerful. Very, very powerful, like just trained from birth to be warriors. Where are they now? They're in the history books, that's it. You know, the Romans, the English Empire. Prabhupada would sometimes joke, you know, it used to be said that the sun never sets on the English Empire. Now it never rises on the English. I just came from London, I can tell you, it rarely shines there, you know. And that's what it's like. It's like they come and they go. Everything in this material world is transient. And the only way we can actually understand the transient nature is by taking shelter of a transcendentalist who can give us bona fide instructions in the process of devotional service, with the purpose to ultimately bring us to the point of unalloyed devotional service, you know, developing pure love of Godhead. This is the point that this verse is bringing out. So I'll just continue with the word for word. Disham, direction. Pratichim, western. Prayayu, went away. Tapasi, in austerities. Adrita, accepting seriously. Chetasa, in the heart. So we can see here, you know, there's really, really clear points are being made here in this verse about how, because of their pious nature, their sattva, the sadhus, they accepted the instructions of their father on their head. That means just like, you know, say for instance, here in Australia, we when we pick up tulsi, we carry tulsi like this, right? Or sometimes you'll see devotees will have one in each arm. You go to West Bengal, where do they carry tulsi? On their head. Why? What's that a sign of? Two things. Respect and submission. Huh? Yeah, but it's respect and submission, because, you know, I'm lesser. I'm a lesser person, therefore I carry my head. Yeah? So we see here it's this word shirasha is saying how they carried the instruction of their father on their head. It meant they not only did they follow it, but they respected the instruction. Yeah? So very, very important there. And then also this point of adrita cetasa is they accepted it seriously in their heart. They took these instructions very, very seriously because they understood that these instructions would actually bring them the ultimate goal of life. Yeah? Srila Prabhupada's translation. The great sage Maitreya continued, "My dear Vidura, because of their pious nature, all the sons of Prachanabahi very seriously accepted the words of their father with heart and soul, and with these words on their heads, they went toward the west to execute their father's order responsively." The great sage Maitreya continued, "My dear Vidura, because of their pious nature, all the sons of Prachabahi very seriously accepted the words of their father with heart and soul, and with these words on their heads, they went toward the west to execute their father's order." Purport. In this verse, sattva, meaning pious or well-behaved, is very important, especially at the present moment. It is derived from the word sadhu. A perfect sadhu is one who is always engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prachinabahi's sons are described as sattva because of their complete obedience to their father. The father, king, and spiritual master are supposed to be representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such, they have to be respected as the Supreme Lord. It is a duty of the father, the spiritual master, and the king to regulate their subordinates in such a way that they ultimately become fully unalloyed devotees of the Supreme Lord. That is the duty of the superiors. And it is the duty of the subordinates to obey their orders perfectly and in a disciplined way. The word shirasa on their heads is also significant, for the prachetas accepted the orders of their father and carried them on their heads, which means they accepted them in complete surrender. So, just a little bit of a recap. We see that Vidura is inquiring from Maitreya about the dynasty of... Whose dynasty is it? Preacher and Dhruva, that's right. Yeah, thank you. And he's explaining particularly about the descendants of Vijitashva, who had been discussed previously. Vijitashva was quite an extraordinary person. And, you know, we see when Indra had stolen the horse several times, he was prompted by, Angiras, was it? Which one? Atri Muni, yeah, to kill Indra. But because of his, saintly qualities, he just couldn't do it. Also, you know, Indra was playing tricks on him. He kept dressing himself up as different types of sannyasis, but still he couldn't do it. So then, you know, we see here how it mentions Antardhan, how Indra gave him his name Antardhan, which means he can see things which are hidden. But he was actually a very, very great soul. And he couldn't, you know, like even it describes how when he was functioning as a king, he couldn't administer harshly. He couldn't punish the citizens, even if they'd done the wrong thing. So ultimately he knew that actually this is the duty of the king, is to punish the wrongdoer. So he gave up because he was saintly. He was inclined towards saintly life. So then it describes his different descendants. And of course it gets to the point of Prachanabahi. So Bahishat means one who's doing so many yagyas that the whole earth became strewn with krusha grass. But unfortunately, Bahishat was doing fruitive yagyas, and then And it's kind of interesting because this chapter here starts talking about prachetas, but in the next chapter, almost through to the end of the fourth canto, it talks about Prachabahi and his life as trying to enjoy himself in the material world, fruitive activities. Then it progresses on to the story of King Paranjana, etc., etc. You know, it's quite a lengthy dialogue. And then it also is showing. It's actually when I was in London, I was Sri Prahlad Prabhu came and visited me I think he came every day while I was in hospital, and so we were having this quite a lengthy conversation about Narad Muni's appearance in the Bhagavatam. Narad Muni appears in every canto in the Bhagavatam except the 12th canto, and he's very prominent throughout the Bhagavatam. And actually, you can understand that Narad Muni is the main character in the Bhagavatam. Because, you know, Narad Muni is quite an extraordinary personality, and he's living his life as a Bhagavatam. He is a living example of the Bhagavatam. And he's, you know, he functions as a messenger, he functions as a guru, and he just guides people to the point of pure bhakti. So a very, very prominent character. Anyway, coming to the point here, we see that as Maitreya, he's giving a synopsis to Vidura of the story here. And we see that he just touches briefly upon how the prachetas, you know, they receive the instruction from Prachinabahi to practice austerity and become realized, God realized. So then they decide to go, I think they go to the north. Well, it says the west here though, doesn't it? Yeah, to the west, which is unusual because normally they'll head north because north is considered to be the direction of realization. But anyhow, so they head to the west to practice God realization, and then they meet Lord Shiva. And they follow the instructions of Lord Shiva. So he gives this in a very, very, you know, synopsis-like form. And then Vidura's interest is piqued by this. You think, well, this is really amazing because Lord Shiva's a great soul. Things like this don't happen, you know, casually. He's thinking, why has this happened? Why is it that Lord Shiva has actually stopped to give them instruction? So he wants to know, because there's obviously something significant is going on here. And then so he inquires from Maitreya, and then basically from here up to verse 32, he describes how they meet Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva gives him some basic instruction. Then from 33 through to 68, I think, we see that Lord Shiva is the Rudra Gita, basically. He is the song sung by Lord Shiva, which is what the title of this chapter is. And essentially this song is just glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is a prayer which Lord Shiva learnt from Lord Brahma. And then in the concluding 11 verses, it's just talking about the benefits of chanting this prayer. And how, if the prachetas, if they follow this, they'll achieve, if they chant this every day with faith and veneration, then they'll achieve God realization, which is ultimately what they do. So we see here now is what happened is that he's talking, he describes to Vidura how he's starting to discuss the nature of the prachetas, you know, which will continue, I think, around about chapter 30, we see it picks up again. With the discussion of the prachetas, where is it? Yeah, chapter 30 is the activities of prachetas. Then 31, Narad Muni. See, Narad Muni appears again. This and gives instructions to the prachetas. And you know, in chapters 25 through to 29, he's instructing Prachinabahi. You know, like five chapters, he's giving them this because Prachinabahi was so absorbed in fruitive activity. There's no way possible that he was just going to give it up if Narad Muni says, "Well, this is a waste of time, you should give it up." So he had to go through this whole, you know, fantastic story just to convince him. And I think in the end, he talks about how then Prachinabahi becomes a woman in his next life. And is it this story or is it another story where he becomes a goat? Or he talks about a he-goat and a she-goat. Huh? It's in their pastime. And then at one point it's going on. And then Prachinabahi goes, "God, I'm the goat. He realizes that he's the goat, you know. After all this story, like five chapters of like hundreds of verses he's talking, and finally he realizes at that point he gives it all up. So you can see the nature of a preacher is the endeavor they will go to in order to bring people to the point of Krishna consciousness, because this is the goal of life. Nothing else you see in this material world. I was just talking with Jairam about this last night, Jairam Prabhu. He was talking about how his business is, you know, fluctuating. But that's the nature of everything in this material world. Everything is temporary. I've had some very solid realizations of this lately. Everything is temporary in this material world. You know, sitting in the hospital, UCL hospital in London, and just watching people literally on the verge of death, you know. And even, where was I? Oh, that's right. You know, I was in two hospitals. We're in St. Mary's Hospital, and like Merle Manahai, the head pujari there in London. He's a very great soul, and he cared for me like I've never been cared for by anyone in my life. And we were there at St. Mary's one day. This is after I'd had the operation, and he called me over the window, and we went over the window, and they were bringing a corpse out to just put it into the ambulance and take away. And just, you really get the idea. It's like birth, death, old age, and disease. That's what's going on here. It's all transient. It's all temporary. So anything we become attached to that's of this material world, doesn't matter what it is, doesn't matter how much you pay for it, doesn't matter how strong or how weak or whatever it is, it's all temporary. The only thing that's eternal is our relationship with Krishna and our relationship with the Vaishnavas. This is the only thing eternal in this material world. So we need to not waste our time. And this is the point with the Prachetas, is they understood that this is all transient. They got the point. That's why they took this instruction on their head. They go, okay, we're out of here. We're going to go and perform austerities to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They understood the temporary nature of this material world. And this is the thing, is we really need to imbibe this deeply. It's like everything we experience in this material world, save and except for Krishna consciousness, is going to come, it's going to remain for some time, it's going to dwindle, and it's going to vanish. It doesn't matter what it is. It can be your family, it can be all your dearly loved ones, it can be your job, it can be your house, your car, whatever it is. It's going to come, it's going to remain for some time, it's going to dwindle and vanish. And all the stuff that's going on in this material world, in the meantime, it's just interactions, the modes of material nature. You know, you may have relationships with people, interactions of mode of material nature. You may have disagreements with people. It's just interactions of false ego, modes of material nature, things like that. So the idea here is when we receive this instruction, just like the Bhagavatam is giving us so much instruction on how to practice the process of devotional service. So let's take this on our heads seriously. Not just, oh yeah, nice book, you know, interesting stories, things like that. No, Bhagavatam is something quite different. It's not some ordinary book. It's not some nice stories or something like that. But actually, as the sages of Navasharanya, they're questioning Sutta Goswami, and he makes this one statement. He says, Krishna Swa Dhamma Pagade Dhamma Gyani Visa Karanashti Dishama Sha Puranaka Dhanodhana. This Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun. So, you know, anyone, like, you're probably not going to see very much sun right now, but when the sun, in middle of summer, you're looking at the sun, it's so bright you can't actually look at it. So the Bhagavad Purana is like that. It's so bright, it can illuminate everywhere. Even the deepest, darkest region of Kali Yuga will get illumination from this Bhagavad Purana. And it's describing how persons have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in this age. They'll get light from this Purana. So by studying the Bhagavatam, by taking these instructions seriously, taking them to heart, will actually gradually overcome the influence of this age we're living in. Because Kali Yuga is a very, very difficult age. Just like I was saying before, the prominent nature of everyone in this age is to defy the superior. What do they know? You know, they're old has-beens, they're worn out, they're ancient, they're like living in the past, whatever. You know, all this stuff about following superiors, being submissive to superiors. No one does that anymore. That's just, you know, that's old-fashioned. But the thing is, it worked. It did work, and it does work. And people doing their own thing, as is very common in this day and age, doesn't work very well. And we find that in this material world, the only thing that's really increasing is suffering. People are not becoming happy. They're all aspiring for happiness, but they're not becoming happy. But the Bhagavad Gita gives us a simple process. It's just, you know, as we see what is mentioned in the Gita, it says, Tadvidi Pratipahateena Pariprasthena Sevya Upadekshantite Gyanas Gyananas Tapada. Just try to learn the truth. Try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively, render service. So immediately he's talking about putting ourselves in the subordinate position. Because when we actually put ourselves in the subordinate position, then the superior becomes happy to impart spiritual knowledge to us, becomes happy to take care of us, becomes happy to guide us on the spiritual path. But, you know, it's just like if you have someone who's always, you know, kicking and screaming and objecting and arguing with you, okay, fine, just do it your way, isn't it? You don't want to get involved because it's just too much hard work, and there's so many others who actually want to be guided, who actually want to understand the spiritual path. So this point is made very clearly in the Gita, it's made very clearly throughout the scriptures about the importance of taking shelter of a bona fide guide, whether it's a spiritual master, either Diksha or Siksha or whatever, doesn't really matter. The point is we need guidance on the spiritual path, because it's not something, you know, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, it's not a do-it-yourself guide to transcendence. You know, like you go into Bunnings and you can buy all these DIY kits and they give you a set of instructions and how do you bowl, away you go. It's not like that. Spiritual life is not like that. You need guidance. Because this is the point it's making in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It says, sadhu sangha shava shastra koi, lava matra sadhu sangha sava siddha hoi. That is the verdict, it says, shava shastra koi. It's the verdict of all revealed scriptures that a moment's association with sadhu, one can achieve sava siddha hoi. You can get all spiritual perfection. Why? Because the sadhu shows us how to live our life according to the philosophy. Shows us how to be devotees of Krishna. That's why it's so important. And, you know, sadhus, they take many, many, you know, all shapes and sizes, as they say, you know, and all different ways. It's not like the process of bhakti is not just very narrow and there's only one way of practicing it. The process of bhakti is very, very broad. And there's so many different ways we can apply ourselves in the process of bhakti according to our nature. And the process of bhakti does not deny that we all have individual natures and does not just, you know, like obliterate that and just wipe it out and pretend it's not there. Because the fact of it is we are all individual. No two jivas are the same. Whereas, you know, if we were to say that, you know, bhakti is this very narrow process and we all have to be exactly the same, then you'd find that only very few people could fit into that. But the idea with bhakti is it's for everyone. So we see that there are many, many, and this is part of the reason why we see that, you know, devotee A is attracted to this guru, devotee B is attracted to this guru. We're all attracted to different personalities. We're inspired by different personalities. And this is because of our individual nature and their individual nature. We find it inspiring. So the ideal is to find someone who inspires you in devotional service and take instruction from them. Follow their example. There's a nice series of verses in the, I think it's the 22nd chapter of the Madhyalila. It starts with Guru Padashaya Diksu Guru Sevana Sad Dhamma Siksha Priksha Sadamaga Anugamana. It goes through all the 64 items of devotional service. I only ever learnt the first verse. But it says, you know, Guru Padashaya Diksha. So you take shelter of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. And as I said, this can mean Diksha, this can mean Siksha, whatever. So you take shelter of those feet, meaning you take the instruction. Guru Padashaya Diksha, then you receive initiation. Guru Padashaya Diksha, Guru Sevana, you serve. Sad Dharma, Siksha Priksha. You follow the spiritual process and you inquire about the spiritual process. Sadhu, Marga, Anugamana. And then you follow the path of the great authorities. And this is the beginning, not the finish, it's the beginning. You know, there's Rupa Goswami, he gives 10 activities in the beginning, the 10 things you should do, then 10 things you shouldn't do. But this is just the beginning of bhakti. And there's so many other elements of bhakti. But there's a very, very important point that's being made here about, and this is the beginning stage. Now, the beginning stage is they receive the instruction. They take it on their head as their life and soul. They take it to their heart. And they just, whatever it is, you know, they have to do to achieve that instruction, they'll do it. So this is the guaranteed way of success in on the path of bhakti. So thank you very much. Any questions or comments at all? I can't really see the clock, so I don't know what time it is. I do now. I look at my phone. Any comments, questions? Now, they're setting a very good example for us to follow. And then when they receive instructions from Lord Shiva, then they just take them as their heart and soul, and they achieve success by those instructions. Okay. Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Bindaki, Jai Nitya Gopremanandi.